That is so, Joseph's enemy replied with emphasis to this address, whose offensive insinuations he swallowed down for the sake of its otherwise encouraging nature. Loyal and anxious concern bring me before your countenance, to warn you, my lord and my son, of a danger so pressing that it merited my admission earlier to your presence. For too easily, yes, at any moment, it may be too late. You alarm me. I am sorry, and yet it is my purpose to alarm you, for the danger is imminent, and with all the keen perception of which I am master, I cannot, I, your servant, be sure that it is not already too late, and your disgrace already accomplished fact. In that case, it would still in one respect not be too late, for you are still alive. So I am threatened with death? With both shame and death. I should consider the one welcome, could I not avoid the other, said Petitpré grandly. And whence do these things threaten me? I have already, responded Dudu, gone so far in indicating the source of the danger that it is unmistakable, unless for an ear too fearful to hear it. Your impertinence makes plain to me in what an evil case I am, retorted Petitpré. Obviously it corresponds to my situation, and I am reduced to praising the zeal which is its source. I admit that my fear is insuperable. Help me, my friend, and tell me the truth so straightforwardly that even my fear has no place to hide from it. Very good, then, answered the dwarf, changing his legs and putting one hand on his hip. This is your situation. The unsatisfied and contagious qualities of the young steward Osarsif have kindled a fire in the breast of your wife Mut-Em-Enet, and the flames already, with crackling and smoke, lick at the supports of your honor, which are near to collapsing and burying your life beneath them. Petitpré drew up the linen sheet over his chin and mouth as far as his nose. "You would say," he asked from under the sheet, "that the mistress and the young steward have not only cast eyes on each other, but that they also threaten my life?" "Quite," replied the dwarf. He changed fists with a bounce. "That is the situation of a man who but late was so great."
"And what evidence?" asked the captain in a subdued voice, the sheet going up and down on his mouth. "Have you for so frightful a charge?"
"My watchfulness," Dudu gave answer. "My eyes and ears, the penetration which was given me by my zeal for the welfare of the house, may be witness, my poor master, for the lamentable and regrettable truth of my revelations. Who can say which of the two? For so must we now speak of these persons who, in virtue of their rank, are so widely separated. The two, we must say, which of them first cast his eyes upon the other? Yet their eyes met. They lost themselves criminally in each other's depths. And there you have it. We must consider, my master, that Mut-Em-Enet, in the Valley of Desolation, is a woman of a lonely bed. As for the steward, he is inflammable and inflaming. What servant would be beckoned in vain by such a mistress? That would presume a love and loyalty to the lady's husband, which obviously does not exist in the person of the highest steward, but only in the next lower ranks. Guilt? To what end inquire who first lifted eyes to the other, or in whose senses the evil first took root? The young steward's guilt consists not only in his acts, but in that he is here at all. His presence in the house kindles and inflames with a fire neither unallayed by lawful wedlock nor made innocuous by the knife. If the mistress is on fire for the slave, it is his existence is at fault. The sin lies at his door. His guilt is the same as though he had made indecent assault upon the innocent, and accordingly should he be served. But this now is the state of things. They have most forward understanding. Billets-doux pass between them, which I have myself seen, and can vouch for their ardor.
Under pretext of consultation on affairs of the house, they meet, now here, now there, in the hall of the women, where the mistress has set up an image of Harachte to please the slave, in the garden, and in the garden house on the mound, yes, even in the mistress's own room, in this house, in all these places, the pair come together secretly, and long since their talk has ceased to be of open matters. It is vanity and idle billing and cooing. How far they have gone, and if they have yet enjoyed each other's flesh, so that it is too late to prevent it, and only revenge remains, I cannot say with full and complete certainty. But what I can take upon mine own head, before all the gods and before you, you humiliated man, is certain truth, because with my own ear I heard it as I listened at the crack, that they, in their blissful madness, appoint and arrange to kill you, striking you with a club on the head, and when you are gone, they will live here in the house as master and mistress, and indulge their lust on a garlanded bed. At these words, Petipre drew the sheet over his whole head and became invisible. So he stayed for some time, so that Dudu began to feel how long it was, though at first he had enjoyed the sight of the master lying there a formless mass, covered and hidden by his shame. But suddenly he thrust back the sheet to his middle and half sat up, facing the dwarf with his little head propped on his hand. "I must express my hearty thanks, guardian of my chests," said he, "for these revelations," he used a Babylonian word, as we might use a French one, "about the saving of my honor, or alternatively, about the fact that it is already lost, and perhaps nothing but my bare life is left. And I must save it, not for itself, but for the sake of revenge, to which it must be devoted from now on. I am in danger of dwelling on this and losing sight of my due gratitude and recognition of the debt I owe you for your information, for my astonishment at the evidence of your loyalty and love equals the anger and horror which I feel. Yes, I confess my surprise. I know that I ought to moderate it, for how often do not the best things come to us from an unlikely quarter, one perhaps where we have bestowed no great signs of confidence and respect. Still, I cannot get over my surprise. You are, after all, a misbegotten changeling, a sort of dwarf jester, and hold your office more as a joke than anything else, a type half repulsive and half absurd, and accentuated both ways by your pomposity. Does it not border on the incredible, or even overstep the border, that you should succeed in penetrating into the private affairs of persons who are, after me, the highest in the house, for instance, to read their love letters, which, according to your account, pass between the mistress and the young steward? Must I, or may I, not doubt the existence of these letters, when it is already unbelievable to me that you should have seen their contents? To do that, my friend, you must have wormed yourself into the confidence of the person who carried them. And how, considering your undeniable repulsiveness, can that seem in the least likely?" "Your dread," responded Dudu, "of having to believe in your shame and humiliation, my poor master, makes you seek grounds for mistrust of me. But believe me, the grounds are ill-chosen. Though so great is your fear and trembling before the truth, which shows you so mocking and miserable a face, that it is really no wonder. Hear, then, how unfounded are your doubts. I needed not to slip into the confidence of the confidential messenger who carried the wanton letters, for that selected person was myself."
"Simply immense," said Petipre. "You grotesque little man, so you carried them yourself. My respect grows, even to hear you say it, but it would have to grow still more before I actually believed it. What? You are so far in the mistress's confidence, and on so familiar a footing, that she thus entrusted to your keeping her happiness and her guilt?"
"Certainly," said Dudu, changing legs and fists again with another bounce. "Not only did she give me the letters to carry, but I dictated them to her.
for she knows nothing about billet-doux, and needed to be instructed in the sweet art.
Who would have thought it? Murmured the chamberlain, as in surprise.
I see more and more how I have underestimated you, and my respect is growing by leaps and bounds. I assume that you have so acted to have matters come to a head, and to see how far the mistress's folly would carry her.
Of course, Dudu agreed. Out of love and loyalty to you, my humbled lord, should I else be standing here to incite you to revenge?
But how did you, contemptible and hideous as you appear at first sight, win the friendship and confidence of the mistress, and make yourself master of her secret?
Petipre wanted to know.
They happened at the same time, answered the dwarf, both together, for I, as all good people would, felt anger and affliction for Amun, that this foreigner had craftily advanced himself so far in the house. I mistrusted him, and the guile of his nature, not without justice, as you will admit, since he has now betrayed you and shamed your marriage-bed, and, after you had heaped benefits upon his head, has made you the laughing-stock of the capital and probably of the two lands. In my anger and suspicion, I complained to Moot, your wife, about the affront and injustice, and pointed out and called attention to the person of the wretch. At first she did not know whom I meant, but soon she hearkened so eagerly to my complaints, and in so contrary a way, speaking so wantonly and amorously under cover of a just concern, that I was not long in knowing that she lusted in her bowels after the youth, and was smitten like a very kitchen-maid, having completely surrendered all her pride, for the which his presence is to blame. And if a man like me had not taken hold of the affair, and associated himself with it, in order to explode the whole plot at the right moment, it would have been all up with your honor. So, seeing your wife's thoughts take such devious ways, I slipped after them, like a thief in the night, whom one will catch in the act. I inspired her with the idea of the billet-doux, to tempt her, and to try how things were with her, and how far she would go, and I found all my expectation exceeded, for by dint of the confidence she reposed in me, because she thought me a man of the world and ready to serve her lust, I learned to my horror that the young steward had inflamed our noble lady so far that she would stop at nothing, and that not only your honor, but your life is in immediate danger. Ah, said Petipre, so you called him to her attention, and inspired her acts. Well, so much for the mistress. But even now I simply cannot believe that a man with your drawbacks could have won the steward's trust. That I consider simply impossible.
Your skepticism, my dear dishonored lord, must give way before the facts. I consider your dread responsible, but likewise your particular and sacred constitution, which, one must admit, is responsible for all the harm, and which makes it impossible for you to understand people, and realize how greatly a man's view of others, and his liking for them, no matter whether they are short or tall, depend on their readiness to serve his pleasure and desires. I needed only to display this readiness, and to offer him my services as a man of the world, as go-between, between our lady and his lust, to have the fool in the snare. My standing with him was such that he soon kept nothing from me, and I was able not only to know all the treacherous dealings of the couple, but to lead them on, and blow up the fire, that I might see how high it would blaze, to what extreme of guilt they would be led, in which I might trap them. For such a course is prescribed for the guardians of the established order, of which I am a model representative. And by this assiduous conduct, I was able to come at their mutual views, and the purpose they cherish. Namely, that he who sleeps with the mistress of the house is master of it. That, my poor gentleman, is the luxurious and murderous plot which they daily discuss, and from it, from their own lips indeed, they deduce their higher right to fall upon you with a club and do you out of the way, that they may celebrate their feast of roses as mistress and as master of the mistress's love. But when things were so far advanced that I heard this from their own lips, the boil seemed ripe for lancing. So I have come to you, in your abasement and misery, to tell you all, that we may trap them.
That shall we, said Petitpré. We shall come upon them, and overwhelm them with fear. You, my dear dwarf, and I, and their sin shall find them out. What think you we should do with them? What punishment do you find at once painful and humiliating enough to be visited upon them?
My judgment is mild, answered Dudu, at least in respect of our moot, the lovely sinner. For that she has no bedfellow excuses much. Also, even though you suffer from their sin, it is not fitting, just between ourselves, for you to make great outcry. Besides, it is, as I said, if the mistress loses her head over a slave, the slave is to blame, for it is due to his very presence that the misfortune occurs, and he should be the one to pay. Yet even toward him I have some mercy. I would not demand that he be bound and thrown to the crocodiles, though he has richly deserved it by his good and his ill luck. For Dudu thinks not so much of revenge as of repentance and prevention, to make an end of the danger. We should but bind him and let the knife do its work, thus rooting out the cause of the sin, that he become unavailable to Mut'em Enet, and his charm have no more meaning in the woman's eyes. I am myself ready to do the deed, if he is properly bound beforehand.